Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week podcast.
The other thing, though, is how much can they change for it to no longer be your likeness? So all of a sudden, I'm watching a movie with Sal Pacino.
Who the f*** is Sal Pacino?
Al Pacino's AI-generated character.
It's like Wish.com Al Pacino.
Yeah. Exactly. Hi-ya.
So here's a question. Do you guys heat up your Pop-Tarts or do you just eat them from the package?
I suppose it's what I'm in the mood for. Like, am I being super lazy?
Right. Like, that was going to be my argument, is that Pop-Tarts are a lazy food, and taking that extra step to put them in the toaster kind of defeats the laziness.
Which is why I love toaster strudels, but that extra step of having to like put the icing on and do all that, that's just too much.
And the thing about the toaster strudels is without the icing on top, they suck.
Oh, they're terrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like, it's like a shitty Danish.
Yeah, so therefore Pop-Tarts are superior purely for that factor. They're good whether you're lazy or not.
What is your Pop-Tart of choice?
Damn, the hard-hitting questions.
I know, right? I really like the s'mores ones. Those are good.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. I think I'm the only person that enjoys unfrosted strawberry.
Unfrosted strawberry. Do they even make the unfrosted ones anymore?
They do.
Donnie was typing and then it stopped. Such was the shock of this admission.
They do make them. They're hard to find.
Because nobody else likes them.
I feel like you could sell them on the black market, you know?
Hey, man, I got some unfrosted Pop-Tarts for you. $40. Straight out the door. Forget about it.
It fell off a truck. What do you want to do? All right. Are we ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Make it show.
Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 82, and today is Wednesday, July 19th, 2023. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I'll be your host this evening. But I am not alone. With me, as always, are my two lovely co-hosts. My first co-host just realized that Splatfest means something entirely different in Europe. He will also be hosting a Splatoon 3 tournament here coming up soon for Stand Up to Cancer. His name is Rye Red, aka Retro Game Brews, aka Ryan Payne. Ryan, how are you doing this evening?
Great. Thank you for merging those two concepts together. I really appreciate that.
We're disgusting, but it's for charity.
Correct. And my second co-host has a bunker full of Pop-Tarts, so when the apocalypse happens, she'll rule the world.
And they frosting. They have frosting, okay?
They have to have frosting, because if this is like Walking Dead style, and you've got a backpack full of Pop-Tarts, and you go to trade, and they don't have frosting, you're going to get shot.
Yeah, forget it.
Just imagine like Blue running a Thunderdome, and the prize is Pop-Tarts.
Like the last s'mores Pop-Tart on the planet.
We have a champion. Oh, by the way, I'm splitting it though. It's a two-pack. I get one, you get the other.
Yeah, there's a finder's fee. You understand.
Yeah, 10%. So let's take a look at our reviews, reactions, and requests for this evening. At Mega Knight X says, just listening for the first time, y'all are hilarious. Thank you, Mega Knight. That warms my heart.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Puzzlebetter says, the Rhinos, the Razor Sharks. You already got me thinking about Red Wings games from college because Rochester likes their R's.
Represent. Woo.
Screw the Red Wings.
It's a baseball team.
Oh, okay. That's good. I thought they were talking about the Detroit
no,
Red Wings.
No. Rochester Red Wings are AAA ball team.
All right. Go Red Wings. Woo. Yeah. And at SassySony007 says, great episode this week. So will we be seeing an OnlyFans link for Big John Bear and Camilla Bree soon? Or will they be making ends meet at the new Angry Birds Cafe?
And Blue, what was your response to this? Remind me.
My response was, plot twist, it will be an Angry Birds themed OnlyFans tier. It's the best of both worlds, man.
Are we dressing up as Angry Birds now?
I'm sure there's some market for that.
Body paint. It's going to be body paint. Yeah. It's very, very tasteful.
Yeah, it's very well done. And now it's time for the
No! Oh, you went with it. Oh my God.
Hello, Georgie. What a nice vote. Do you want it back?
Yes, please.
You look like a nice boy. I bet you have a lot of video games.
Three, but my brother is playing my best game.
Where is he?
In bed, sick.
I bet I could cheer him up. I'll give him a balloon.
So creepy.
Do you want a balloon, too?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers.
Oh, well, I'm Pennywise, the podcasting clown. Now we are strangers, aren't we?
What are you doing in the sewer?
Why, the storm just blew me away. It blew the whole very important pole away. You like balloons, don't you, Georgie?
Do they vote?
Vote? Oh, indeed they do, Georgie.
I know it's indeed coming, I know it, I love it.
Everything down here votes. And when you're down here with us, you'll vote too.
Oh, I love it.
Y'all vote too! Y'all
I knew
vote
it was
too.
Coming!
Y'all vote too!
As soon as you said, will they vote? I was like, oh, I know where this is going. I love it.
They all vote down here.
It was there for the taking. I had to do it.
That was awesome.
Oh, it was perfect.
All right. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP. That is our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So this week's question, what is your favorite pause music in video games? Coming in third place, we have V with a meager 2.6% of the votes. Second place was Battletoads with 28%. And the winner by a landslide was GoldenEye 007, 59.5% of the votes. We also had 10% of people vote other, so let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At Jugum Jenny said, I know it originally had a different purpose, but Leaning Dream from Pizza Tower is choice. I can and have fallen asleep to that loop. At Legit Punisher says, GTA 4 Ballad of Gay Tony is up there. At Ants May Be Cool says, Legend of Dragoon has the best pause music, and I am sad nobody else has experienced perfection. At At David Wise, yes, the David Wise.
The David Wise.
Says, wow, what a result. So retro, just the age I'm feeling now. Battletoads NES was first released in 1991, with the arcade version following in 1994. And what a game GoldenEye still is from 1997. And Holy Headshot says, there's pause music?
You guys are getting paid?
So how did you vote in the poll, Ryan?
So I'm going to go with the consensus on this one. I think GoldenEye 007, even though Battletoads is like my first thing that came to mind, was just that, like, that beat, you know, that constantly plays in the background. And that was really my first experience with pause music. But something about GoldenEye, it just hit. It's probably one of the best tracks in the entire freaking game. And it's the pause music. So kudos to the team at Rare. Well done. Definitely got to go with GoldenEye 007. And it's funny, I crap on this game a lot, but if anybody said, hey, could you say one nice thing about GoldenEye 007, I'd say, has the best pause music.
Hell yeah, brother.
There you go. What about you, Donnie?
I'm following in Ryan's footsteps this week with 007 pause music. Tell me something that you can't do with this pause music going on in the background. That it doesn't fit. You can do a lot. You can do a lot.
Oh, you can totally do that.
You don't know what I'm thinking.
You could cut the grass. You could bake some cookies. You could rob a bank. You could do all this stuff with the GoldenEye pause music. And it just, it slaps. That's my choice.
Bring in a boombox to rob the bank. Yeah. And then everyone just like, all right, well, this got a lot better.
All right, guys, I'm going to set the mood. I'm going to put this on. Click, click. Get on the ground. You see, I'm not angry. And everybody's like, oh, man, I can get into this.
Yeah, go take the money.
Yeah, cool. Here you go, dude. Good. Well done.
Leave the boombox, though.
Yeah.
That's a fair trade.
Yeah. I take the money. You take the boombox. Blue, what's your choice this week?
This was a brutal poll. This was terrible. It took me forever to think of an answer because what games still have pause music?
Right.
Yeah.
Especially for a lot of retro games, it would pause the music, or it would keep playing the music from the level. And even modern games, if you hit pause, it usually keeps playing the music that was already playing in the background. So I literally could not think of anything. And then I had a video game music radio on YouTube, and this song comes on from a game called Friday Night Funkin'. Have you guys heard of this?
I have. My son used to play it.
Okay. It is, for anybody else who didn't know, because I hadn't heard of it before this, an open source rhythm game released as a demo in 2020 for a game jam. But the soundtrack to this thing is amazing. And the pause menu music is called Breakfast. And it's so cool. It's like a funky elevator music with a cool bass line, and there's horns and everything.
Interesting.
I put a link in the Zencaster chat if you guys want to listen to it.
Oh, man, this reminds me of like Toe Jam and Earl or something.
Right, exactly. It's all kind of in that same family. So this is my choice for my new favorite pause menu music.
Sorry, still listening.
No, I'll say we can wait. I don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm done.
You can keep humming it for us too.
Now let's take a look at our patron shoutouts for the week.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Ivor Divide, Maddo 1606, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red Ox PDX Family, including Shanna and Luke, Jalaziel, Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Boys Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamma Troid, Michael LeKite, Emo Esk, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcake's Number One Stan, Duck with Thick Thighs, The Storm starts when the drops start dropping. When the drops stop dropping, then the storms start stopping. Wow, that was a
struggle.
Yep. Enorma Stitz. Fourth place is the third loser. Wizard of Zardoz, Bobson Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Siaman 81, BNT Zilla Guy, Geek with Dad, Johnny Boombox, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnear, Ducks in Skies, Jim and Colleen, and Games with Coffee. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also access our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
What? What was that?
Go back and read Enormous...
He just got it.
I was like, who the hell is Enormous Stitz?
Approximately 10 hours later.
Enormous tits.
Take your time. God. Let it settle.
I'm going to grab a water real quick. I'll be right back. <All right. laughs>
Three days later.
Enormous tits.
Are you still going?
Yep.
Oh God, I'm trying to get it together.
Please leave all of this in.
I'm seriously considering it.
They say guys never grow up.
You don't say.
I'll be on my deathbed, and all of a sudden, like, my eyes will open. I'll be like, enormous tits. All right, why don't we jump on over to our headlines for this week? Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast.
You can do it. Come on now. Stay on target.
It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're playing through Berserk and Crossbow. Visit them at RetroGameClub.net or follow the link in the show notes. Berserker.
Would you like some making?
Berserker. Now, Berserk, I kind of remember, but Crossbow, I don't think I do.
It's a light-gun shooter released in arcades in 1983.
Oh. Thank you, Google.
Yeah, right. And it's the controller is a crossbow. Okay. I think I remember seeing this cabinet in an arcade. I don't think I've ever played it.
Berserk, I absolutely know. But Crossbow, yeah, I've never even seen this. This is completely new to me. And now I want to play it.
Because yeah. It's a freaking crossbow.
Not ringing a bell for me. And I do feel like if I'd ever walked past an arcade cabinet that had a crossbow, I would 100% pick it up.
Fits into your repertoire, huh?
Of course.
Bedazzled Shanks and Crossbows. That should be the name of your punk band.
Nice.
I don't hate it. I'm going to write that down.
Before we get into the headlines, here's a quick update on what's going on in Microsoft Activision Blizzard news. Sony has agreed to a 10-year deal for Call of Duty with Microsoft to keep the franchise on PlayStation after the proposed $69 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard. This ends a bitter battle between the companies that has been waged both privately and publicly over the past year. Microsoft and Activision have agreed to extend the deadline for the platform holder's acquisition. The deal was originally due to be completed by July 18, 2023. However, the two firms have agreed on a new deadline of October 18, 2023. Nearly two dozen members of U.S. Congress have signed a letter calling for the Federal Trade Commission to abandon its legal challenge against Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard. In the letter, the group says, "We write to express our concerns and to urge you to drop this matter and refocus the FTC's resources on work that supports the interests of American consumers."
I feel like they gave us an extra man in this game by extending it all the way out to October rather than July. So we can keep talking about this. Yay!
And here I was going to ask how you were feeling specifically, Ryan, knowing that your prediction for the year is failing.
I'm okay with being wrong, but I'm not quite wrong yet.
He just got a stay of execution.
Exactly.
Well, good luck for that. Hopefully your lawyer comes through for you. All right, first up tonight from The Verge, Microsoft's new Xbox Game Pass Core will replace Xbox Live Gold in September. Microsoft is launching a new Xbox Game Pass Core subscription to replace Xbox Live Gold. This new Game Pass Core offering will include the usual Xbox Online console, multiplayer support, deals and discounts, and a new small catalog of more than 25 games. Existing Xbox Live Gold members will be automatically transferred across to Xbox Game Pass Core on September 14th, with the service priced at the same rate of $9.99 per month or $59.99 per year as Xbox Live Gold. Xbox Game Pass Core could lead to some confusion around the online multiplayer aspects of Game Pass in general, though. While Core includes multiplayer, the regular Xbox Game Pass that's priced higher does not. You still need Xbox Game Pass Ultimate for the benefits of Game Pass and online multiplayer. Microsoft hasn't solved the potentially confusing aspects of needing Xbox Live Gold alongside a regular Game Pass subscription, and the rebranding arguably makes it even more confusing. The addition of Xbox Game Pass Core comes just weeks after Microsoft bumped its overall Xbox Game Pass monthly prices. Xbox Game Pass Ultimate has moved from $14.99 per month to $16.99 per month. The base Xbox Game Pass for console pricing has also been increased from $9.99 a month to $10.99. Microsoft has not changed its PC Game Pass pricing, though. Microsoft also announced plans to end its Xbox Game Pass Friends and Family plan in August. The plan had spread to 8 countries, but Microsoft acknowledged this was a preview program all along, and it will cease to exist on August 15th. There's no sign if it will return at a later date.
The explanation of this, of how it works, reminded me vaguely of like the commission structure for a multi-level marketing company.
You're not wrong.
And to be fair, there it is. Xbox Live Gold has really been a shell of itself for the last, I don't know, year or so that Game Pass has been out. So this is not surprising to me whatsoever. I'm glad that they're offering this up to current subscribers that get moved over to Game Pass. That makes a whole lot of sense. So they're not missing out on a subscription that they wanted. They get something a little bit different. Hooray. The interesting part, though, being that the structure of this is really weird. So you get what, like 25 games with Core, but you get multiplayer. You get 100 games with the next tier up, but no multiplayer. And then you get like thousands of games or something like that. And
that doesn't make any sense.
Right. It's like, if you could pay us $5 more, we'll take away that thing that you wanted, but we'll give you a few more games. Right? And for the 8 people that sign up with that don't want to play multiplayer, I get it. But jeez.
It does seem like this is kind of Xbox's specialty. Like, let's make things unnecessarily confusing. Xbox Live Gold versus Xbox Game Pass. What are they? Mm-hmm. What's the difference? Which one do you need? Do you need both? They do the same thing with their consoles, of course. Poor parents trying to buy consoles for their kids on Christmas morning. Which one do we get? Yeah. Which one's the new one? I don't know.
Yeah, this couldn't be any more confusing. I'm going to be one of these people who I do Xbox Live Gold, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's not really for me. It's for my kids, because they're the ones that primarily play the Xbox One, the PS4, the Switch, and all that stuff. And I play the Switch, but if they want to move me over to the Xbox Game Pass, I still get multiplayer and I get 25 games out of it. I'll take it.
Yeah, and you also will get access to that on PC as well. So
I do?
I mean, I assumed. If that's not the case, then
no take backsies. I apologize.
But that's the way it's been with Game Pass, is that it's also accessible via PC as well, which opens up a huge library for people who want to play games.
You can just contact the Xbox customer service and say, well, Ryan said, and yeah, there's no take backsies. So.
Where the hell's Ryan?
Jim Ryan, he doesn't work here. But it just reminded me, like, the decisions that they made for this. It must have been like they had this bin of potential choices for what Xbox Game Pass would be. And then they released a bunch of puppies and they were all, you know, dog bones. And whatever puppies! Dog bones they brought back is what the tier was, right?
And then the meeting deteriorated with everybody running around picking up puppies. And then somebody said, wait, we still got to name this thing.
Open up the other bin. We got names for it in there.
Just want to get the dart gun.
Core? Okay, I guess.
Yeah, it's not too surprising to hear that they're raising the prices either. because as we know over the past several months of talking about this, that Game Pass doesn't really bring in as much money as Microsoft needs it to. So, of course, the prices went up. But I'm going to say that, you know, $9.99 a month to $10.99, that's not so bad. It's a heck of a lot better than companies like Netflix do.
Yeah. Well, and you think about it, too, where they said there's, what, 24 Game Pass subscribers currently? 24 million, sorry, not 24. 24. No wonder it's not making money. So that raising it a dollar adds $25 million more to their coffers. And by raising or by adding an extra $2 to the $14.99 tier, that's an extra $48 million. So the margins certainly pay for themselves. And it seems like it's not a lot extra. Well, it's only $2 more to get multiplayer, so I might as well sign up for the multiplayer. Nickel and diamond you, laughing all the way to the bank.
You know the simplest solution to this? Just be a hermit.
Burn it all down?
Well, That. I don't hate that idea either, but you know, there's also secondary, aside from arson, you can just be a hermit.
I like the arson, though.
I do, yeah. Yeah.
Who doesn't?
All right, next up from Eurogamer, Twitch Partner Plus program is anti-community, says streamers. So Twitch recently unveiled its new Partner Plus program that offers an improved revenue split, but streamers have now described it to Eurogamer as anti-community. The program was announced last month for launch in October and is set to offer a 70-30 revenue split, higher than the usual 50-50 between streamers and Twitch. However, the criteria for this higher revenue split is very specific, meaning few streamers will likely reach the necessary requirements. Partners who wish to qualify for Partner Plus program will need to maintain a subscription count of at least 350 recurring paid subscriptions for 3 consecutive months. One-off gift subscriptions and subscriptions through Prime do not count. For many streamers, this criteria is impossible. Analytics platform StreamCharts revealed only 2.5% of partners would actually qualify for this program, just over 1,000 streamers total. It felt like an optical illusion where the goalposts were getting closer, but in actual fact, the view had shifted, said Twitch ambassador Ibanex. In reality, there are very few people who can get 350 paid subs on this platform, particularly those from marginalized demographics. Speaking to Eurogamer, Twitch Director of Community Marketing and Production, Mary Kish stated, "We are a community of gamers. They're going to gamify it. They're going to see how they can get it. Let's see who can achieve this goal. And if it's not what everybody wants, then let's take those learnings and let's adapt it and move forward." In short, the high criteria for success is something akin to tough love, Kish appears to suggest. The intention is to prepare you for the challenge that you will face, because once you hit that milestone, there's another milestone, and it's harder, said Kish. So preparing someone for the inevitable hill that will be very difficult to climb, and maybe they will not make it at first, is, I think, a career lesson.
Condescending much?
Wow, no empathy whatsoever.
She's basically just saying, suck it, nerds.
It reminds me of EA's response when, I think it was Star Wars Battlefront 2, where you had to grind for over 40 hours to be able to play as Darth Vader. And of course, people didn't like that. And they said, well, it's a challenge and we want to give people a challenge so that they can accomplish something and feel good about themselves. I mean, really, it's an excuse for putting something in front of you, making it so difficult to achieve that it's near impossible. And in the meantime, we're going to make more money because of it.
Right. This to me is a classic example of the rich get richer.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're already hitting 350 subscribers every single month or more, you're already making a really good income off of Twitch. One that you could probably sustain a lifestyle not having to work a regular 9-to-5 job. So now all of a sudden they're going to get 20 extra percent. Good for them. I'm happy that all the work has paid off. Amaranth gets to show her bikini on a daily basis and get paid for it. Good for her. But in that same vein, what's the advantage of being a partner now?
Well, that's the advantage. Okay.
Right. Because if you're a partner, only 2.5% of partners, it's really difficult to get partner status on Twitch anyway.
Of course.
That's a huge milestone to get to. You have to sustain 75 viewers for, you know, like 3 months, and you actually have to qualify as being like a partially an influencer outside of Twitch as well. You've got a Twitter account with eight followers on it, you're not going to be eligible for partner. I mean, granted, you could probably just go, hey, everybody, I need to make partner. Please follow me on Twitch or on Twitter or whatever. But nonetheless, it's already a huge step to get to partner. And now it says, okay, well, what's the advantage of being a partner? The one thing you get is you get to create your own community. Hooray. That's great. But now you have a new tier that's on top of that. You're basically getting the same revenue as affiliates at 50-50. So again, what's the advantage of being a partner at this point? They've created a situation that makes it so there's haves and have-nots in this situation, in this community. And honestly, at the end of the day, if I was a partner, I would look at this as being a kind of a punch in the mouth a little bit.
Well, yeah, if they are setting up these parameters to join this Partner Plus program, and you know that Twitch has analytics on everything in their platform, and they know exactly how many partners they have and how many subscriptions the average one has. And they know when they set this up that of all the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people streaming on Twitch, that only about 1,000 streamers would qualify for this. They knew this when they set it up. And they're like, oh no, it's a game, you guys. Come on, play the game with us. Who can make this? Or you set realistic goals to actually motivate people, not impossible things that are just, like you said, a punch in the mouth. Twitch is so tone deaf. Yeah. They have proven this in the past and they continue to prove it now.
So I'm reading over the difference of what it means to be a Twitch partner versus a Twitch affiliate. And it says that you'll earn revenue from all video ads shown on your channel. This includes pre-roll, mid-roll, and post-roll ads. Plus, you will be able to have the ability to run ad breaks, making revenue before and after your streams, as well as during natural breaks. An affiliate is eligible for payout when the pre-tax accrued revenue balance gets to $100. Twitch partners, meanwhile, get revenue from channel subscriptions and emotes, as well as bits and ads. So that sounds like the same thing.
They are the same picture.
Right.
Well, Mary Kish says in here, if it's not what everybody wants, then let's take those learnings and let's adapt it and move forward. It'll be interesting to see if Twitch will honor that. I mean, they have shown in the past several months that they will cave to pressure.
Of course.
So I think that this Partner Plus program will not be long-lived.
You think it'll change by October?
I'd be willing to bet that, yeah.
Okay. That's Blue's prediction.
Well, we're just making impromptu predictions.
Yeah.
Bill's Super Bowl champions this year.
Oh, God. Oh, I feel much better about my prediction.
Yeah. Cute.
Kisses.
Next up from CNET, handheld gaming consoles will soon require replaceable batteries. The next generation of handheld gaming consoles could all have batteries you can replace yourself, thanks to a new regulation in the European Union. The new rule, which the European Council adopted on July 10th, is designed to ensure sustainability and reduce battery waste. Batteries are key to the decarbonization process, Teresa Ribera, Spanish Minister for the Ecological Transition, said in a statement. End-of-life batteries contain many valuable resources, and we must be able to reuse those critical raw materials. The regulation will apply to all batteries, including all waste portable batteries, electric vehicle batteries, industrial batteries, starting, lightning and ignition batteries, used mostly for vehicles and machinery, and batteries for light means of transport, electrical bikes, e-mopeds, and e-scooters, the European Council said last week. This would also include portable handheld gaming consoles like the Nintendo Switch and the Steam Deck, which means you would be able to remove and replace your own gaming console battery by 2027. Portable batteries must be readily removable and replaceable by the end user at any time during the lifetime of the product, according to the new rule. While this new regulation will only apply in the EU, it could result in console makers ensuring replaceable batteries worldwide rather than making a separate device for the European market. Nintendo and Valve didn't immediately respond to a request for comment because they're like, oh, crap. When I read the line, the title of the article, I'm like, we've always had replaceable batteries.
Yeah, like triple A's and double A's.
The Game Boy, the Game Gear, the
Turbo
Graphics.
Yeah, your Game Gear would last about 45 minutes and then you'd be throwing it away otherwise.
When did we start really getting gamepads? Was that the Wii U?
Yeah, but it wasn't portable at that point.
Okay.
I guess technically, though. I mean, you can take it to the bathroom if you want.
The PSP?
Well, that actually had a battery, though, that you could replace.
Did it?
Yes, it did.
I'm sorry. I'm just laughing at PSP.
PSP?
Anytime we reference a PSP, that's how we have to say it. PSP?
I'm here for it.
But I started thinking about the Switch and the Switch Lite and all that stuff. And you're right. You can't replace your own battery in that thing. So if that thing fries, you're toast. You have to essentially go get a brand new console.
And to the point of this article, when you get rid of the Switch, that battery goes with it. So it becomes part of e-waste.
Correct.
And there are a lot of things in batteries that can be reharvested. But chances are most people aren't going to recycle their Switch. They're just going to toss it, which makes me sad in a number of ways.
Right. That was my initial question, is who throws out a Switch? I mean, obviously, this is something that primarily affects Nintendo because they're the company that still has a heavy presence in handhelds. But of course, it's also the Analog Pocket. You've got smaller niche things like the Playdate. And even Sony has their new Q handheld coming up. So it kind of makes you wonder, is this something that the gaming companies have been keeping their eye on, knowing that this could pass? Or is this just kind of like they woke up on July 10th and went, oh, crap? Because when they're thinking about their next console after the Switch, or, you know, we got to get this Q handheld out and supply chains are already a mess. And what's this now? We have to do replaceable batteries and we only have 4 years to do it. I wonder what the result of this will be.
The Switch 2 will now be a dedicated home console. You cannot take it portably.
No more handhelds. Or there is the possibility that companies just don't sell handhelds in Europe anymore and just decide they're not going to deal with it.
Ooh.
Nintendo not selling in Europe? I've never heard of that.
I know,
before.
Right? That would be so weird and completely unprecedented. I mean, you could still sell your regular consoles in Europe. But as far as handhelds, I mean, depending on how cost effective they're able to make these batteries and this technology, how the supply chain shakes out in the next several years, it may just be that Europe doesn't get handhelds unless they're buying them on the black market.
I don't know about that. That's the, do we want a little bit of money or do we want no money at all?
Well, and that's the case. My guess is, I mean, Nintendo's done that with like the Wii. They came out with one that red one that the door pops open and you push it down really cheap and crappy. I could imagine that they just make one that's a dedicated home console. That could be their solution to that in Europe specifically. And of course, I would buy one because
collectors.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. But it'd be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, obviously, you know, we'll still be doing the podcast in 2027. So
obviously.
So it'll be interesting to kind of see the evolution of this. My guess is that they're going to announce a lot more of this as time goes on. So 2026 will probably be full of stories about
this. The reason why we'll still be doing the podcast is that the Activision Blizzard acquisition will still not be completed.
Just keep milking that cash cow.
Now it's time to take a look at our top three new releases.
Okay, first up is Viewfinder, out on PS5 and PC. Viewfinder is a mind-bending first-person adventure game in which you can bring pictures to life by placing them into the world. Viewfinder's narrative is player-driven and will be an approachable experience to someone who just wants to play and solve puzzles, and a rich, well-thought-off world to a player who wants to learn more. Find the answer to the impossible once you step in the world of Viewfinder. Next is Might and Magic Clash of Heroes, the definitive edition, out on PS4, Switch, and PC. Might and Magic Clash of Heroes is a unique mix of puzzle, strategy, and RPG. Plan your every move and combine your attacks to defeat your enemies in matching puzzle-inspired battle scenarios. Upgrade your heroes and creatures to unleash increasingly devastating attacks onto your opponents, and let the strategic thinker in you lead your troops to victory. Originally developed by Capybara Games, Might and Magic Clash of Heroes is getting a definitive edition, including its DLC, refreshed character portraits, many quality of life improvements, and an expanded, fully reworked, and rebalanced online mode. And finally, Pikmin 4 out on Switch. Meet Pikmin, small plant-like creatures with distinct abilities that you can grow, pluck, guide, and overpower enemies with. Use your Pikmin's miniature might and a bit of strategy to explore this mysterious planet in search of your crew and treasure. To succeed, you'll have to balance caring for the Pikmin with leading them into dangerous situations. Do your best out there. So out of these three, what are you in for, Donnie?
I have to be 100% honest here. Not a single game this week is really scratching me where I itch. I'm not a Pikmin fan. Might and Magic, you might have had me, but I don't do strategy games. I prefer not to think whenever I play games. And then Viewfinder, maybe I could give this one a chance. It almost has like a Mist or Riven type feel to it. But I don't know. The game just seems a little bit too upbeat for my particular taste. So this week, probably none of them.
All right. What about you, Ryan?
So looking at Viewfinder, I think that it should probably come with a pack of weed gummies to follow along with it. Because looking at the gameplay, it reminds me of something that you could play, but only under the influence of herbs is what I'll call it. So probably not for me on that one. Might and Magic reminds me of like a Raid Shadow Legends mobile game.
Yes, it does. Perfect. Yes. Nailed on the head.
Yep. Which we are not sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends, but we will take money.
Are we going to sink that low?
It depends on how much.
You're not wrong.
Which leads me to Pikmin 4. And I think this one wins for the week for one particular reason. There is the cutest dog of all time that you can partner up with in Pikmin 4. And any game that has a dog in it wins in my book. So Pikmin, and as well, I would imagine it's a game that will probably not hit on everyone's radar. So getting a copy of it might be lucrative in the future. So I'm also obsessed. So I will likely be picking it up for that reason.
Blue, what about you? What are you picking up this week?
Yeah, I am going to pass on the Might and Magic Clash of Heroes. Pikmin 4, I've never played a Pikmin game, but the early reviews on this game are saying that it's really, really good and it's really, really accommodating to beginners as well. So if I was going to start with a Pikmin game, I would probably go with this one, and especially because it has a free demo on the Switch. So I'm open to this one, but actually the one that has my attention is Viewfinder, because you guys know I like puzzle games, and this one looks super trippy, like you have to think completely out of the box, and I love those kinds of games.
Viewfinder looks like a mix between Portal, Mist, and Pokemon Snap. So if you liked all those games, I'm sure that you're gonna love this one. So
Viewfinder it is.
This month, we're giving away a brand new copy of Pikmin 4 for the Nintendo Switch. To enter our giveaway, look for at Retro Game Brews pinned tweet on Friday, July 21st. Give our Twitter account at GamersWeekPC a follow and retweet for one entry. If you want to do two more entries, comment with a picture or screenshot of you listening to episode 82 for a possible total of three entries. Entries will be accepted from July 21st to Tuesday, July 25th. And we have a goal giveaway as well. If we reach 350 subscribers on Spotify, we'll give away a copy of Bayonetta 3 for the Switch to one of the two winners. You're already listening to the episode, so you might as well enter now before you forget.
All right, let's move on to our main topic for the week.
From Sports Illustrated. We get a lot of articles from Sports Illustrated, right?
Totally.
Voice actors speak out on how the SAG-AFTRA strike affects video games. If you spent any time on the internet or kept an eye on the news these past few weeks, you'll know that both the Writers Guild of America and Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, are on strike. The union strike effectively puts a stop to most film and TV production in the U.S., and it doesn't seem that it'll be letting up anytime soon, with some speculating it could last until at least October. But as you may or may not know, many voice actors are part of the SAG, and voice actors play a pretty massive role in modern games. Right now, both WGA and SAG, massive film and TV industry unions, are on strike. The WGA is made up of
11,500 writers for film, TV, radio, and more. 97.85% of WGA members voted to go on strike on April 18th if an agreement with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers was not reached by May 1st, which it was not. SAG, on the other hand, compromises over 160,000 actors, including film, TV actors, both minor and major, voice actors for film, TV, some animation, and more. Basically, if you see a person in just about everything you watch, they're probably in SAG. Screen Actors Guild went on strike last week after contract negotiations with the AMPTP fell through.
On the face of it, both strikes are because of contract negotiations with the AMPTP. Things are a little bit more complicated than that, though. The AMPTP represents big studios and streaming services like Amazon, Apple, Disney, NBC Universal, Netflix, Paramount, Sony, Warner Brothers, and Blockbuster. Scratch that last one. And writers and actors are concerned about how streaming will affect their livelihoods. Most actors and writers don't get residuals from streams of content they've appeared in or written, instead sometimes getting a small cut of the licensing fees when a company like Netflix signs content to its platform. Another major concern is the increase in prevalence of AI and similar technologies. Actors are concerned that companies could use their likeness in conjunction with AI and deepfake technologies to create content without their input, permission, or compensation. Ashley Birch, one of the most prominent voice actors in video games and known for her role as Aloy in the Horizon series, says that the strike is to protect the future of the profession. There are so many issues at stake here, the bottom line of all of them being, how do we protect the longevity and sustainability of our professions? There are so many writers and actors that are barely getting by or had to leave the profession because they couldn't make ends meet. These are people that were actively working these contracts and still couldn't live off of their wages. That's unacceptable. She added, add the threat of unregulated AI on top of that, and it's clear that the only path forward was to strike.
This specific strike is unlikely to have an impact on games very much, if at all. Voice actor Sissy Jones, who received a BAFTA for her role as Delilah in Firewatch, says that the contract for interactive content has a no-strike clause, so there can't be solidarity strikes for actors in the games industry. That doesn't mean it will stay that way forever, though. Jones says that the kinds of issues that led to the SAG-AFTRA and WGA strikes, such as the use of AI and the potential for royalties, better pay, and more, aren't entirely removed from the games industry. This affects all of us. Many facets of the industry face similar changes/challenges, she says. There needs to be a way for us to all exist in this space and not have the creatives, the actors, writers, editors, animators, and anyone currently trying to earn a living in this industry cut out completely so a few millionaires make a few more bucks. As technology improves and as companies look to technology to cut corners and pinch pennies, those who work in the creative industries are more at risk than they have ever been. The SAG-AFTRA and WGA strikes represent a first step towards acknowledging and fighting back against these risks, and industrial action at this scale is almost certainly going to have a ripple effect throughout all creative industries, video games included.
This is pretty dangerous when you think about what the studios are considering doing with AI,
right,
and using the likeness of different actors, which I don't know how you can possibly do. If you want to get an actor's likeness to play a role, I mean, they have to audition, they have to be set in a contract and whatnot, but how can you just go ahead and create an artificial intelligence character or skin or whatever to slap on a body, get some random person in here, oh, I'm going to slap Idris Elba's face on this this no-name person who's going to act like a stunt double, and there you go. That's Idris Elba, stars in this new movie. And he doesn't get anything for it. Nobody's going to be able to break into being an actor anymore.
It takes away the humanity of this art form. I mean, granted, technology is chugging along at a very fast pace here. So This idea of AI actors is looming on the horizon. But at the end of the day, the best films you've ever seen, the best content that you've ever watched has been produced and starring someone with talent, someone that went to school for this, somebody who has mastered their craft over decades and decades to be where they are today. And to see that replaced by a bunch of ones and zeros, not a fan, I gotta be honest.
It's been so interesting working as a freelance writer as this AI thing has come on, because There's a stark divide in the types of jobs that are available now. I had a supervisor at one of my jobs say that writers were dying as a profession. And so I needed to learn how to leverage AI so that I could market myself as an AI expert and try to earn a living that way, because there was going to be no point in writing anymore. And looking at the jobs that are posted now in the last year, there's a small percentage of jobs that say no AI writing whatsoever. If you're found to be using AI, it will be grounds for being immediately fired. But far more job postings out there say, we want writers who know how to leverage AI so that they can write faster, better, more efficiently, and cheaper. So we can just churn that content out and it's good enough. Maybe it's not winning a Pulitzer, but it's good enough to get a few clicks. And that's all anybody cares about is it good enough to get a few dollars? And while we all hate the idea that there could potentially be a future where there are no more human actors, no more human voice actors, no more human, you know, actual screen actors, nothing. Everything is computer generated. We hate that because we know what the human side of it looks like and feels like and is capable of. But another generation or two, they won't know the difference and they probably won't care.
No. And to your point, with as far as it being cheaper, you're going to get paid less because it's not going to take you as long to work on an article.
My favorite job listings are the ones that want you to come in and train the AI so that as soon as the AI is good enough and they don't need you, then you've just made yourself obsolete.
Could you come in and train your replacement? That'd be great. I know that you've only worked here for a week, but that would be awesome.
Right.
Jesus.
People who are fans of AI say that it has such potential for all of this stuff, and it's going to streamline communications and make humanity more efficient, and it's all this kind of stuff, but I just don't buy it. And I don't want to be that person who is slowly aging in the demographics and, you know, just can't accept new technology. But from where I sit, the cost of using AI is so high that I don't see how streamlining a few communication systems is worth it.
Old woman shakes fist at Skynet.
Right.
They took their jobs.
I mean, they kind of are.
Yeah, they are. It's going to get a point, or it's going to become a point where, you know, all the different things that we've seen in the movies with everything's automated, programmed and stuff like that. Everything that used to be able to be done by a human is now done by a machine. And the world works so much more efficiently because we're living in the land of the Jetsons, where we press a button and it cleans up everything. It does the dishes. I don't have to do anything.
It's not the world of the Jetsons. It's the world of WALL-E, where we're all, you know, 500 pounds in our little hover chairs.
I'm okay with this, though.
Do you guys want to go hit some golf balls? No, I hit golf balls yesterday.
What I think devil's advocate here is, though, it creates a risk, because this is for mostly U.S.-based actors, actresses, writers, that kind of thing, because it's a union based in the United States. Now, granted, there are a lot of international people who are part of it, but the biggest thing that you're going to look at is that there are countries out there that would be willing to replace Hollywood as the mainstay when it comes to cinema. Now, Hollywood has had a stranglehold on cinema since its inception, realistically. And that has created a lot of jobs in California, an entire state that is really dedicated to this whole thing. But you get a country like China, who is, you know, obviously state-run, and they're going to be able to pop out content that is in every language that you want, and bringing in people who, to your point, Donnie, that all they have to do is be in a mocap suit, and then they can figure out how to paste over your favorite actor or actress. Then they're going to make all the money for this. So it puts Hollywood at a kind of a risk of being obsolete, which is strange to say.
Here's the thing with likeness, though. You can't use somebody's likeness in a video game, in a movie, in a television commercial, or anything like that without them being compensated at this present time. So if they don't
give their court.
Yeah, right. In U.S. courts. That's strictly what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
If they don't give their likeness, the particular screen studios do not have a leg to stand on.
The other thing, though, is how much can they change for it to no longer be your likeness? So all of a sudden, I'm watching a movie with Sal Pacina.
Who the f- is Sal Pacino?
Al Pacino's AI generated right. character.
It's like wish.com Al Pacino.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. Hi-ya.
But I mean, you actually kind of make a point, because let's talk about the recent Indiana Jones movie where they needed to de-age Harrison Ford. I mean, imagine if they just could have just had a virtual version of Harrison Ford that never got older, and they could make Indiana Jones movies forever.
You wouldn't have to change out James Bond every four movies if you wanted to.
In that regards, I do like the fact that there's a different James Bond. I think that's sort of the mystery that adds to the mystery of it. But I don't I don't want a particular franchise to go on and on and on and on. Make a couple of them and that's it.
The Mega Man of movies.
Or they make a James Bond movie, and then as an audience member, you just choose which is your favorite James Bond, and then he gets put into the movie.
So like you go to the theater, everybody votes, and you know, like Sean Connery gets most of the votes.
By then, they're just beaming it directly into your head.
Oh, that's right, with Neuralink, right?
Yeah, with like Batman Forever. Was that it? Batman Forever?
I don't know. I think I passed out during that movie.
Val Kilmer and Jim Carrey, where he's got the thing,
the brain box.
Yeah.
Actually created goggles that'll do that now. Augmented reality, where you can have your computer, you put on these goggles, and it's like another screen that's like 120-inch screen.
And, yeah,
you
know, it's like the 4K. The new Apple thing. Yep. Heck is it called? I forgot. Anyway, I can't afford it, so it didn't matter to me. But yeah, I mean, to bring this back to video games, it's not so much an actor problem. It does go back to the writers. It goes back to the graphic artists. It probably will even get to the point where AI is writing the music for us and we no longer need composers. Even though this seems like a Hollywood problem, I think Ashley Birch is right in that it affects all of us. And anybody who cares about creativity or making content or even consuming quality content should be concerned about where this is all going.
What's the line? They were so concerned about whether they could, they never stopped to think about whether they should.
Yeah, but if you're the multi-billionaire sitting at the top of these corporations, you don't care. You just want another six yachts.
Because five would be not enough.
No, that's, not nearly. That's you'd ridiculous. Be embarrassed to go to the billionaire club with only five yachts. They'd laugh you out.
Look at this guy. It's only got five yachts. He probably doesn't even beat beluga caviar.
He didn't have baby seal for breakfast.
Oh. You eat baby seals for breakfast?
No.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. Here is this week's trivia question. Goat Simulator wasn't the first franchise to skip over a sequentially numbered game in a series. Another franchise infamously did the same in the early 90s for various true and mythological reasons, and it became a running gag referenced in subsequent games in the series. Name that franchise. Tune in to the Elitist Podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll also have their links in the show notes.
All right. Admittedly, I did not get this one. So if you do, I will be very impressed.
Nothing's coming to mind off the top of my head.
No. The only thing I could think of is how there's not a...
Redacted.
There is.
Technically, there is.
Technically, but it's not called...
Redacted.
Yeah, it is.
In the arcade, yeah.
That's super technically.
You're not gonna mention that, Robo.
My Robo bus.
I think maybe then the answer is wrong. My thought was
redacted.
That actually was my first thought, but I came to the same conclusion that there's no gag.
Okay.
And Donnie always pays attention to when there's a gag.
Specifically, ball gags.
Those are my secrets.
So the answer is
redacted.
Oh,
what? Where's the gag?
So apparently they must have referenced it in later entries. Like, okay, you know, It's like Star Wars is four. How you count Star Wars is 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
2, 3. Right.
1, 2, Vader's coming for you.
That's what they sing in the Jedi Academy, the little kid Jedi Academy.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for coming, students. Please take your seat. Welcome back to Professor Rybrett's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we'll talk about the stores that to a gaming nerd was the omphalos of our childhood. Rows and rows of games, consoles, and gaming paraphernalia. We, of course, are going to be talking about video game stores of the 80s and 90s. So shopping for video games today usually means going online or to a big retail chain like Best Buy or Target. But if you want to purchase from a store dedicated solely to gaming, your choices are usually a mom and pop shop or GameStop. Ever wonder why all those stores that we shopped at as kids seem to have disappeared only to reemerge as a GameStop? Well, today we will uncover the mystery or misery, depending on who you ask. So the first of the two retail stores that had regional success in North America is Electronics Boutique, or EB for short. Started in King of Prussia, just outside of Philadelphia in 1977, originally selling digital watches and calculators. Bear in mind, the Atari 2600 released that year, so games weren't exactly a stable marketplace for most small retailers who were willing to take a risk on games. Now, EB soon found themselves focusing on all types of electronics, but mostly centered around computers related to business and productivity. They eventually opened up stores under the name Gadget and Games, which were focused on, especially on electronic entertainment. In the mid-1990s, however, they switched their model solely over to home console video games as the market was exploding in North America at the time. Eventually, EB would start expanding into international markets as well, including Canada in 1993, the UK in 1995, Australia in 1997, where you can still find stores operating under the EB Games name. Our second player was the well-remembered Funcoland. Personally, never stepped foot into this store, but I'm told that it was a haven for the nerdy gamer. Also, particularly like the training videos that included a genie-like character teaching a young employee how to upsell their products. If you have not watched it on YouTube, I highly recommend it for the cringy lulls.
Let me out of here!
There's only one way to escape this place.
What is it?
Know the letters. Complete the game.
What letters? What are you talking about?
To win your freedom, you must collect the letters G, A, M, E, S. Games. To prove to me you know the Funcoland sales process.
And while you're there, check out Blockbuster 2 with the guy on the TV named Buster. It's peak cringe.
Yo, Marie. Hey, let's wake up.
Who are you?
The name's Buster. Buster Sales. I am a professional opportunist.
That doesn't sound very nice.
No, not that kind of opportunist. You see, I'm one of the world's greatest authorities on opportunities. I find people who need help, and I help them. And clearly, you need some help.
Moving on. Now, Funcoland started in 1988 with David Pomagier, and that's the last time I'm going to say his name. But its roots stem back to David's first business venture called Protectronics, which was a mail order business based in Minnesota focused on selling Commodore 64 computers. Business did very well, but admittedly, David wasn't exactly the best with money at the time and basically pissed it all away in only a few years. After closing up shop, David was left with 1,100 Nintendo carts. He devised a plan to lease them out to rental stores in the area in order to make back money on his investment. Now, David found himself buying more games as they released and decided that he could take this lesson he learned at Protectronics and apply them to home console gaming. The birth of Funko soon followed, a mail-order video game retailer that would not only sell you games, but buy your old ones. Quickly gaining notoriety in the Minneapolis and regional areas surrounding it would eventually lead David to opening up retail stores under the name Funcoland. David, recognizing he maybe wasn't the best person to lead the change for expanding the business nationwide, brought in executives from B. Dalton and Haagen-Dazs to help. Now, Funcoland would go on to have over 406 retail locations by the year 2000. Now to the business as to why these two companies don't really exist anymore.
a concept called mergers and acquisitions. And in this case, more acquisitions, less merger. By the time the year 2000 came around, EB Games was looking at Funko Land thinking, it would be nice if we could expand our market overnight. Apparently, they had been waiting for the right time to buy Funko Land for years by waiting to see their stock would drop enough in price to be worth their while. So EB Games puts in a bid to Funko Land, who at the time was stagnant, not really failing, but not really growing either. EB wanted to buy Funko for $110 million. Funko is all like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's announce this buyout. But uh-oh, player two has entered the game. Babbage's, another US-based video game store chain, caught wind of this and pleaded with their parent company, Barnes & Noble, to put in a bid to buy Funko for $135 million. Isn't it nice to be the belle of the ball? Now, EB Games came back saying that they would match the offer from Babbage's and that the sale to EB seemed to be a lock. However, Barnes & Noble looked at their cards and raised their offer to $161.5 million, offered to pay the $3.5 billion breakup fee that was established in the original offer. So in June of 2000, Funko Land was officially purchased by Babbage's and Barnes & Noble, which Funko Land and Babbage's would merge together to become everyone's favorite games retailer, GameStop. Yeah.
You sure about that?
Eventually, GameStop, it would, in 2004, split off it from its parent company, Barnes & Noble, and form its own corporation. In 2005, GameStop, acting as a corporate Pac-Man ready to swallow more retailers, sought to buy out old rival EB Games. A deal was garnered between the two stores to the tune of $1.44 billion, mostly in stock options. As often happens with acquisitions, many of the corporate office employees of EB were laid off, a loss of 800 jobs, and only 65 employees were asked to stay to work on for GameStop. Now, GameStop would go on to swallow more companies than Joey Chestnut swallows hot dogs every 4th of July.
Glizzies. Call them glizzies.
Yeah, glizzies.
I'm done. I'm done. Have a great day, guys.
Gulp down those glizzies.
Including the following: Rhino Video Games, Free Record Shop out of Norway, Micromania out of France, Jolt Online Game out of Ireland, Kongregate, Spawn Labs, Impulse, BuyMyTronics, Simply Mac, Spring Mobile, Radio Shack, which included 163 locations, GeekNet, and 507 AT&T wireless store chains because they wanted to expand their business model. So in recent years, GameStop has floundered in its space due to less interest in retail shopping, strange business practices, poor publicity, and memification of their poor reputation. Recently, we talked about this on the show, that they're even getting into the NFT space. So I hope that works out for them.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Right. So to wrap things up, looking back at our favorite retail stores finally is a great trip down memory lane. However, over the last two decades or more, mergers and acquisitions have homogenized the consumer experience and perhaps lost its personal touch that made shopping at places like Funko Land and Electronics Boutique truly special. But I'm willing to bet your locally owned retro shop will fill that void and make you remember the good times. Thank you for attending today's Gaming History 101. Just a reminder, if you have ideas for a story you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com and we might feature your suggestion.
I treat the GameStops like the DMV. I don't go in them unless I absolutely have to.
You're right. It's not available anywhere else, I'm going to head over to GameStop.
Right. But, yeah. And then you go in expecting to be screwed over.
Would you like to sign up with the Power Pass?
Yeah, exactly. You get this free copy of Game Informer.
Who also laid off everyone.
And hasn't been relevant in two decades.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening to episode 82 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, the Leetest Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. You can email us at GamersWeekPodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, just follow the link in the show notes. Also, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. While you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. But we didn't have our Twitch thing in there.
I took it out because we never stream.
Well, I'm going to get back to it.
No pressure. It's summer. We've all been busy.
You know, what a great way, though, for her to call you out.
That was not the intention. It's actually been gone a couple episodes and nobody noticed.
Just not noticed it. Well played, Blue.
Donnie's really on the ball tonight about noticing things the first time through.
I did notice that he didn't pause at the beginning. I just wanted to throw that out there. Yeah. He rolled right through it.
I did that on purpose. To see if anybody said anything. Nobody said anything.
We didn't want to interrupt you. You seemed like you were on a roll, but I did notice.
Okay. So in essence, this was the whole episode of forgetfulness, but you guys were watching. You were watching.
We're always watching.
We kept the receipts.
Yep.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, folks.
PSP?
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.